Yes, I hear your stomach. Be quiet.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking once again with our friend, acclaimed actor Charles Hubble. We talk about Shakespeare, like all of Shakespeare, but mostly Hamlet.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Tim Wick.
Forsooth.
And we are here today with our good friend of the show, returning guest, Charles Hubble.
It's Geek 6, Geek 6, Geeks Without God. It's Geek.
And as you may have told our guest by Tim's amazing segue there, we are indeed going to be discussing Shakespeare.
It was a quote.
Oh, it was a quote. Was You're a right. Quote. That was a quote.
Right. Thee and thou in Shakespeare.
So, Charles, you recently played Claudius in Hamlet. Where did you perform?
I did. Park Square. Did a production of Hamlet back in October and November of 2017. I was Claudius in that one. We had cast like Corey Pullum. We had Sandra Struthers. And it was directed by Joel Sass. So he directed and also did the stage on that. Other people were Catherine Fumier. And boy, what a wacky romp we had. It was actually a very streamlined production. There was a lot of cuts in the script.
Oh, okay.
To make it fast and furious. We had schools come in and watch it. It was sort of a modern day House of Cards kind of look. Hamlet this time.
What sorts of things were cut?
The whole Rosencrantz and Guildenstern stuff.
Yeah, the subplot there.
Stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Anything kind of comedic.
Did you cut
light?
The Fortinbras stuff?
Cut the Fortinbras stuff.
That's
stuff
the first
always
thing that goes.
Yeah, that's the
first thing that goes.
Right. No, I mean, some of the comedy stuff, the play within a play was still there.
Okay.
The Yorick graveyard stuff was still there. A lot of the hits. I like to say the hits in Hamlet
pretty
were
sure
all
if
still
you get,
there.
If you get rid of the grave scene with Yorick, people are going to notice.
Yeah.
People wouldn't recognize it as Hamlet because It's what gets
it's
quoted.
One
it's
of the two things they know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the logo of Hamlet. Is
sure.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
It's the out damn spot of Hamlet.
Yeah, that's right.
Globe
yeah.
Theater put together their marketing material back when Shakespeare was alive.
Yeah.
Even then. Yeah. Even then, it was Hamlet holding
it was absolutely.
The mouse ears of Shakespeare. it was sort of put together as an educational thing. They wanted to sell tickets. It was a fast-moving, fast-paced
nice.
Thing. I enjoyed doing it. But what I noticed about it is being an atheist in the production and how there are religious themes in Hamlet, in the script. There are things he wrestles with. And I think as skeptics, we would see things that don't really match with each other. Like at one point, he would say, well, I don't believe in omens and superstitions. And yet, everything that he's done has been propelled by seeing some ghost who tells him what to do.
Yeah.
And it's all about
a conspiracy theory ghost at that. Like, a ghost who is like, no, everything you know is a lie.
Yeah. So it's always been interesting to me as an atheist performer to do projects where I have to play things I don't believe in. It's one thing to be a Christian and play the devil. It's another just not to believe in any of it. And which I guess you could say all religion is theater. So in that sense, you could say, okay, it's just storytelling and it's just metaphors for what you're trying to explain the world. But and I tried with Clarence Weather and I tried to do a podcast called Atheatrics. And I admire you guys for your tenacity. I just couldn't. I just couldn't keep it going. But we wanted to explore... What is it to be a performer and then do Christian theme stuff, things that just take Christianity for granted? Because the play just sort of takes for granted that everybody's a Christian and at the time, everybody understands the hierarchy of being. Angels are up here, men are here, animals are down here. And so they turned this play into how does he wrestle with, how does Hamlet wrestle with the sort of primal rules of, hey, you murdered somebody, you need to die, the sort of eye for an eye thing. And then the more intellectual or higher thinking of, well, the biggest sin you can do is murder. So he's stuck in this angst of, do I kill my uncle for killing my father? Which I know he did it because a ghost told
him. Right. Ghost promised. My dad's ghost, who has nothing to gain.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
The difference between justice and revenge.
Yeah, yeah, right. So he doesn't want to go to hell for murdering someone. Mm-hmm. And so it's fascinating. So you also have... He also wants to kill Claudius at the right time. So he finds Claudius praying, and, well, I can't kill him now, because if he's praying, that means he's forgiven. So if I kill him, he's going to go to heaven instead of going to hell, which is where I want him to go. So how do I do this? And I want it to be honorable, because I don't want to go to hell for killing my uncle. So he's sort of stuck. It's a revenge tragedy that really, it teases mm-hmm. you all along. And it's interesting, when it came out at the time, it was surrounded by revenge tragedies where it was just grand guignol of just kill that person, yeah. Next scene, kill that person. And this time it was, I'm going to kill him. And then they waited, and it kept waiting, kept putting it off. And I think at the time, I think that was really highly praised for the suspension of that death.
Do you feel when you are taking on a role of a religious person that it's different from when you take on the role of any other person who isn't like you? When you play any other role that is either, you know, completely opposite of your personality or something that you've never explored hobby-wise or anything, is there a difference there because of the atheism and because of the way that you know, I don't want to say persecution, but just the way that it feels to be othered in that way normally?
Well, I think the difference is primarily in the fact that if you have that belief system, then you're telling a story where you think that belief system is real, I guess. So whereas I can look at everything generally, universally across the board, and think that, well, this is just, I just have to get to know what makes this particular character click.
Sure.
This serial killer has this problem with his dad, which I don't, but I'm going to think about that as a reason to motivate him. Mm-hmm. Or this person is in love with this other person, which motivates them. This person thinks that there's a magic guy in the sky or a magic guy deep down underground that makes him do terrible things. So all of that remains theoretical instead of practical. That's not the right word, but like there isn't a realism there.
Sure. So,
it's layers of pretend.
Layers of pretend. Yeah. Mm. It's all, it's all just storytelling in the end. It's all a mask to put on. Whereas I think if they really had that belief system, they're walking out of the theater and they're still carrying on the story in real life instead of leaving it at the theater.
That's church. They they go and they hear the story and they sing the songs and they, you know, look at in whatever the book has to offer for them, and they leave and it doesn't stay there. You go see the new Avengers movie. You don't walk out like, awesome, I can't wait to go see Captain America in the streets and go save New York from aliens.
Yeah,
you left your suspension of disbelief at the door.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not like that for church.
If only I believe, I will make an Ant-Man
sure.
costume.
Right,
believe
yeah.
hard enough and I'll become a superhero.
Go find some Pym particles.
that would actually be very cool.
Well, sure.
I mean, Shakespeare has a lot of religious themes pretty much running through all of his work. And I mean, it makes sense given when he was writing.
Right.
Given the society in which he lived.
Religion he was subversive, but not that subversive.
Right, and he doubted superstition. So you have King Lear, where Edgar and Edmund, they battle about, why are you bothering to listen to the stars? They have this whole discussion about, why do you live your life according to horoscope? It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't matter. Here in Hamlet, he says, I defy augury, which is I defy omens, and I don't believe in any of that bullshit. But I do believe in ghosts, and God says this, and I'm going to do exactly what a ghost tells me to do.
Although we have
which only I can see.
Yeah, right. How convenient.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah.
Other people see him earlier. That's true. In Act One, there are the guards on the parapet that do mm-hmm. see the ghost. And the ghost is actually correct.
That's right.
We have to give the ghost some credit.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be a conspiracy theory, but in fact, the conspiracy theory is accurate.
He wasn't dripping poison in Hamlet's ear, as it were.
That's true. Wah, wah, wah. So the ghosts can see him, and Hamlet's best friend can see him at the very beginning, Horatio.
Yeah.
But then his mother can't see the ghost in the bedchamber scene.
Which raises the question, well, if it was there at the beginning, is it there then? I always got the feeling, just, you know, reading Shakespeare, he may not have been into all sorts of stars and stuff like that, but there's a lot of supernatural elements in Shakespeare.
I think he was afraid of ghosts, for sure. I genuinely think he might have believed in ghosts.
And witches,
yeah.
To some degree, yeah.
Like horoscope stuff, I could see someone being like, that's just something dumb based on when you were born and where the stars were. That's happenstance. But the mistakes you've made on Earth and then your ghost requiring retribution for those mistakes is something that I could see that happening. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, he believes in God, but he'll... I mean, you assume he believes in God. You don't know that for sure. Certainly, he's not going to say anything atheistic in his writing.
Right.
But
you're killed.
Yeah, he. His writing also includes, at times, even in material where it's characters that are clearly not like in Rome or something like that, pre-Christian, that where characters are talking about multiple gods, where mm-hmm. they'll reference mm-hmm. the Roman gods or the Greek gods or the Norse gods as also being real and having influence on what they're doing. Hamlet is much more based in Christianity. I mean, there is that scene with Claudius praying and Hamlet saying, well, I'm not going to kill him because he'll go to heaven. And
right.
Claudius then says, well, I'm not. That praying was fake.
Could Hamlet actually be positioned under a different god? Could it be a different religion other than Christianity? But they do reference Christian scripture in Hamlet.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. My other question was going to be, do you feel that Claudius is a religious character? Like, is he a believer, or was he praying because he is it more of a fear motivated? You know, kind of religion in that way.
Brilliant way to bring this back into Claudius. Yeah, when I was working on Claudius, is he a spiritual man? I think he is, and he is juggling. The way that I did it is that he knew that by killing his brother, he was in the wrong, and that clearly he was going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
But he still wanted to pray. To bend and force the divine will to at least ally itself with him and make things work out. I think he, because in the big hit speech, we were talking about the hits of Hamlet, and that's what the play was. We have Claudius's prayer, and that is specifically, I know I did all these things, but now it's my crown. Mm-hmm. Now it's my queen. Now it's my mm-hmm. riches. And I want to hang on to this. I want it all to be worth it, and hanging on to these things is going to make it worth it. So he wants to ask forgiveness, but he simply can't because he wants these things so badly. So he does want to influence the divine to be shaped by Claudius's will instead of to the will of God.
Which I think you could argue is not truly Christian,
right.
to pray as a method simply of asking for things to go your way and because you want them, and that's all, not because there's any reason other than you want.
Well,
and not like, well, he was an awful king and I'll be a better king and this is for the good of men. No, like, there could be Machiavellian arguments there where it's like, look, sure, I murdered him, but this will be so good for the kingdom.
Yeah.
This will be so,
Renly style.
God, I've seen the error of my ways, and I want to make a powerful, good Christian nation.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with this script, with the Hamlet script, because not only is the Oedipal nature of it with Hamlet and his mm-hmm. mother rolling around on her bed in one scene. But it's also that once Claudius becomes king, there is a noticeable difference in the kingdom. There is more drinking. There is more mm-hmm. gambling. So just like Oedipus, they want to remove Oedipus because the whole country is going to shit. So the only way to write that is to get rid of Oedipus. So in Hamlet, the only way to write that is to get rid of Claudius.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, if you... The thing about leaving out the Fortinbras stuff, which makes sense in one aspect, is the Fortinbras stuff is all about the consequences of what Claudius has done and the consequences of Hamlet's inaction. Because Claudius is a bad king. Claudius allows Denmark to be defeated by an invading force because he's too busy enjoying the spoils of his actions.
Yeah, I think that's
and
right.
Hamlet is too busy focusing on taking out Claudius and failing to recognize that his own country is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that, I mean, he encounters when he's being shipped away by Claudius overseas, he encounters Fortinbras' army, and it doesn't occur to him the threat that it poses to his own country.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that is kind of interesting that huge piece of Hamlet is almost always left out. But it, in fact, is really important because it shows you the consequences of these characters and how what Claudius did was bad for Denmark in so many ways.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Now I want to read a story or see a show or something that is like Death Note or Sherlock Holmes style genius outwitting each other story where two people are trying to trick each other into going to hell, where it's like I can't kill him, he just prayed, okay, I need to wait a week. And
it's spy versus spy.
Yeah, but it's two people trying to manipulate each other into being the one that goes to hell without damning themselves.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a super fun story. Like that could be great.
Big fun radio fun time at Convergence, ladies and gentlemen. It could happen.
Are you feeling hungry? Why? What's in that food? No, don't worry about it.
It's okay.
Why would you assume it's kosher?
Maybe.
Why would you assume there'd be anything in the food? Like that's. I feel like you're making a terrible assumption about me, a holy man.
There are troubling things in Hamlet where things just don't really match up. You know, so you have Hamlet's ghost. The King Hamlet turns into a ghost. And you get to hear from him, but you don't get to hear from, say, Yorick, who's just a skull in the ground. You have to.
How long has he been dead? By the way, it seems very weird that that Hamlet, who is 17, knew him well, and yet this skull is just picked clean.
He's been maybe dead for 12 years, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, at the time, though, he probably wasn't buried in a coffin.
Probably just buried in the ground, maybe.
But he was really old.
Yeah. It's interesting.
That was when they did above-ground burials in the rat district.
They hosed him down with some lye and just left him out to melt.
Well, he's digging that grave for Ophelia, who had just committed suicide.
Hmm.
And Hamlet's coming back from rescuing himself from the pirates, and he stumbles upon the funeral of Ophelia. So they're digging out this grave to lay Ophelia in because the king is trying to appease Laertes by giving Ophelia a burial, but she's committed suicide, so officially she can't have a burial.
She's in hell.
But the king has...
Did she commit suicide? I thought it was more...
She drowns herself.
Well, she does drown herself. She's the only one who's truly mad.
I always interpreted it as she was crazy and didn't really recognize.
Oh, sure.
But I mean,
she's put herself in the...
I don't think someone who's mentally well can commit suicide. So
really?
But what?
Oh, I see what you mean.
But what does Shakespeare and God think?
Right.
Shakespeare, God, and everybody.
So what does Shakespeare and God? What does God think? We have to turn to the priests, and in the play, the priest determines that she committed suicide, and he says, "So normally we wouldn't do this, but the king has told us that we have to. So that's why we're burying Ophelia right now." And clearly, they're clearing out some old hole with the mother people that they had buried, presumably rightfully. And so let's just move those bones out of the way, and we'll put Ophelia here.
Yeah.
I think it's fair. And
then, MBD.
I think it's fair that Shakespeare knew poetry, but he might not have known a lot about the decomposition of corpses.
It's possible.
So,
especially, I ever since I was a kid, I have been confused by and appreciative of the fact that Hamlet just picks up a skull and is like, oh, shit, that's Yorick, guys. I knew him.
The grave digger tells him it was Yorick.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You're right. How does the grave digger know?
The grave digger put him there, maybe, presumably.
It's the same. It all comes back to the same story that answers the question, why is he a skull already? Well, the grave digger knows, and the grave digger also knows why it's Yorick, and he can't answer any more questions because he doesn't want to incriminate himself.
Indeed. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
There are so many subplots.
There are. It goes on and on.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy how I think that even in just one play, you can find so many themes and dig so deep, even just in a single scene. You know, like that's one of the things I love the most about Shakespeare, I think, is just that is the layers. And that you can say that for a lot of theater, but specifically because for us, we're having to interpret the language on top of and the meter and everything else on top of the dramatic semiotics and things. It's
anything that is so ingrained in a culture and a time period and has affected so much performance and writing and entertainment ever since. Like anything that's been analyzed that much and has had the time to be analyzed that much will always have an incredible amount of depth and interpretation, regardless of whether or not it was ever intended to be there. It's the whole Neon Genesis Evangelion thing.
Like people
can attribute so much meaning and depth and theme that might be rightfully so, or it might all have been on the interpretation.
So you're saying Tim's great 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 grandchildren will be studying Two and a Half Men in high school?
Possible.
Boy.
The Morricone movie.
The thing about Shakespeare is there's a whole subgenre of a Shakespearean blank, you know, Shakespearean Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
Somebody goes in and writes Two and a Half Men in iambic pentameter.
Yep.
And they're all dressed in Elizabethan dress, but it's still Two and a Half Men.
And it's crazy.
And the idea that on Star Trek, the Klingons claim Shakespeare as their own writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are like, well, you've got to see Hamlet in the original Klingon. It's the idea. And there's, for as fantastical as Star Trek is, it doesn't seem ridiculous to assume that Shakespeare is still going to be performed as frequently and dissected as frequently as it is now.
But it's all human-centric, isn't it?
Yeah.
Surely the Klingons have their own Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Right.
Surely there's somebody as brilliant as...
You would think.
You would think.
Yeah. I think what you mean is surely the humans have their own Shakespeare. thank you. You know, Charles, that was great. It's actually been exciting because you've already answered our five questions for this last round. Which means, that he has brought questions for us.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I do.
All right, and we should get to them.
You guys brought up other movies looking at that were sort of based on Shakespeare. I'm wondering if there is a Shakespeare adaptation that you have seen that you really enjoy. That when you think of Shakespeare, is there a movie that was done of the original play or maybe just updated?
I loved Romeo plus Juliet.
Aha.
I really loved that one. I thought it was really, really well done. I like a lot of straight adaptations, especially like Kenneth Branagh ones and things. But like that's the one that felt more like they were modernizing it and trying to change it a bit. And I thought that they did a really good job of doing the language right and speaking the words as opposed to reciting a poem. Like they were saying the lines. It was good.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask if there's a question about an adaptation that we hate, because if not, I want to make sure I mention one.
I think this we could go that way.
But I mean,
I will
mention one that I really enjoy. But I have to say, there is a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream that was made in the early 2000s, featuring among other things Stanley Tucci and a great many other fantastic actors.
Oh,
that's
Michelle Pfeiffer as Mab, right?
Yeah. It is a terrible, terrible, terrible. Yeah. it's not funny. No. It's just there's nothing about it that's
it's super
good.
Overwrought.
Don't
see it.
It's like because Midsummer Night's Dream is one of Shakespeare's best comedies.
Yeah,
sure.
They just completely ruin it. It's things like there are these two women that where there's Helena and Hermia, mm-hmm. and one of the big things that goes on when they get into arguing later is that one of them is considerably taller than the other.
Yeah,
they cast two actresses that were the same height. So they would, and they didn't even like try and shoot it, so they looked different yeah. heights. So they'd have these arguments where one was referring to how short the other one it was.
Like, but Tim, doesn't that make the whole argument absurd?
Anyway, so you mentioned Kenneth Branagh, or Molly did. And the one that I often go back to that I rewatch a lot is Henry V. And the thing that I really like about it is that what Branagh did with that particular film is make Shakespeare's histories more accessible to people. Mm. Everybody knows his comedies and his tragedies.
Yeah.
And his histories do not get done very often, and there's some really great work in the histories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly he did some cutting and some updating of Henry V to make it more accessible to a modern audience. But it's still, I think, an exceptional introduction to his work. I mean, I've shown it to my kids when they were a lot younger,
mm-hmm.
and the language, he makes the language really accessible and really, I mean, really understandable. When he does that St. Crispin's Day speech, it's Shakespeare's mm-hmm. words, but the way he produces it, the way he underlines it with music really can get those words across to an audience that might not be as comfortable with them.
Does Branagh play Henry in that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays Henry V.
He does.
Strange Brew. It's Hamlet.
Based
it's,
on Hamlet?
Yeah, yeah. They're Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. The brewery changes hands after the death of the owner. And like it's they've made no qualms about it. Like it's loosely based on Hamlet. It's awesome. Super ridiculous and it's great. Like it's proof that you can kind of take any of these archetypal stories and apply them in different places and do them in different ways mm-hmm. and make it like a ridiculous Canadian comedy.
I mean, I did nearly mention 10 Things I Hate About You. Which
right.
And there's also
Taming of the Shrew.
There's also Throne of Blood, which is a fantastic film by Akira Kurosawa.
Sons of Anarchy is also Hamlet.
For sure.
I mean,
I really love Branagh as Much Ado About Nothing, too.
The first season and last season of Sons of Anarchy and are Hamlet. Everything in between is them stretching out Hamlet.
Everything in between are all those scenes people wish they could cut.
Right.
For me, generally, Branagh has produced the best movie versions.
Yeah.
Sure, Hamlet was a little over the top.
Yeah.
Too long.
Certainly. I mean, but and he didn't do much cutting in that. But there were moments in that which were perfect. There were other things that just why did you do that? But Much Ado About Nothing was marvelous.
Yeah.
But there's a movie with Turturro, John Turturro, called Men of Respect, which is based on Macbeth, and that's sort of an updated thing. That's fantastic. Listeners, if you can find that, that's a great one.
Well, and House of Cards is very Macbeth, too.
I hate to
go back to this for a moment, but as a theater person, the Macbeth superstition.
Oh, wow.
Do you do it?
The Scottish play.
Yeah, do you do it?
So this got brought up during the production and rehearsal process of Hamlet. I had to tell you could not say Macbeth in a theater. If you do, bad things happen.
Sure.
And anything from, the superstition is anything from somebody who's going to die to somebody's going to get really injured.
The problem is the superstition can be anything, too. Someone can be like, my car got hit in the parking lot because
somebody
you said
must
that.
Have said Macbeth in the theater.
Yeah.
And in that sense, just like God always wins, superstitions always win. And I would have to say,
it's Pascal's wager.
I respect your desire or your need, apparently, for me not to say Macbeth in the theater, but I don't believe in any of this. I posted on Facebook about how much bullshit it is.
I had some people
turn to me and say, look, I really believe this.
It really bothers me.
And I knew people that really believed it as well. And from my perspective, I choose to respect that superstition just because it's not one I want to fight against.
Yeah.
But given the opportunity to say Macbeth in a theater, I will.
Yeah.
Yes. As will I.
I have a friend.
You kind of look around and see who cringes. Just be like, it's yeah. Like, how about that Macbeth, right, guys?
We've got friends who will, their house is haunted. It's not worth arguing. Yeah. Their house is haunted.
Sure.
And so whenever I'm over there, especially if I'm alone or with Amy Stomberg, I'll be like, hey, if ghosts are real and if you're here, do something, do anything, just show me. And wait. And then people will be like, I can't believe you taunt a ghost like that. And I'm like, I can't believe you don't. Like, don't you want to, wouldn't you just be like, oh shit, like, all right. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sorry
that's
we got
good.
Off
no.
track.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. I think that superstition was something I wanted to bring up when I knew we were going to talk about
that's
it.
That's good to think about.
If you know Hamlet, who's your favorite Hamlet?
Mm. Oh.
I can't tell you the name.
Okay.
But when I was in London during my J-term when I was in college, we watched a production of Hamlet at the Royal Shakespearean Company.
Ooh.
And I do not remember the name of the actor who played Hamlet, but he was electrifyingly good.
Wow.
And cool. The sword fight at the end was blocked and performed so brilliantly, I thought they were going to kill each other.
Oh, wow.
Oh, amazing.
And I would love to be able to tell you the name of the actor, because it was just like, I saw that play, and it literally ruined Hamlet for me, for seeing anybody else perform it, because all I go is, well, he wasn't as good as that guy.
Right.
But that's, I don't have the gentleman's name, and I'm sure he doesn't listen to this podcast, but if you do, sir...
Well done, sir.
It was in 1990, I believe.
Oh.
Royal Shakespearean Company. If you listen to our podcast, please just write in.
Yeah, come on, geeks, go find that.
Nick, do you want to go next, or?
Did you guys see Hamlet 2?
the movie.
No, it's a failing playwright.
Wait, was that the
high
porn
school?
To fuck or not to fuck?
No, it's a movie.
Hamlet 2. It's kind of a disaster comedy, like awkward.
Oh, I know.
It's a mockumentary style.
Was it with Steve Coogan?
Steve Coogan.
Yes,
yep.
I did.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
With the Rock Me Sexy Jesus song?
Yeah, so it's a failed high school theater teacher trying to get through to these kids, and no one has any interest in theater, and he ends up writing his own play, which is the sequel to Hamlet.
Okay.
And people are like, Can you do that when everyone dies? And he's like, I gotcha. Time travel.
Time machine.
Time machine. And so they end up putting on this huge, extravagant, illegal, like closed down warehouse rave space play for Hamlet 2, which is the big title song in this musical production, is Rock Me Sexy Jesus.
Yes.
It has very, very little to do with Hamlet, but it is worth seeing.
It is an amazing film.
Yeah, it's
not,
really silly.
Not amazing in great, but amazing as in great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know, interesting academically, because you could argue that Jesus and Hamlet, Jesus being the top, Hamlet being maybe number two, maybe number three of the most researched and quoted and characters in our culture.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
You
sure.
belong in the same conversation.
It's ridiculous, and I'm picking it because it's ridiculous, and it's total nonsense. Also because I can't actually recall the name of any actors that played Hamlet that stick out in my mind.
I don't remember seeing any. I have never seen Hamlet live. I've only ever seen a movie version, and it was the Brana version.
Yeah.
So I mean that was all right, but I honestly I'm going to go with a funny answer too, just because I have to. But the show Slings and Arrows, which is a Canadian television show,
so good.
They do Hamlet in that, and the that guy actually is an amazing Hamlet. Like, I really enjoy he's super passionate and like way more like rough than they're expecting, and I don't know, I really enjoy it. But that show is fantastic if you like Shakespeare or and theater in general.
Slings and Arrows
is super great,
and it's streaming somewhere.
I'm no Shakespeare expert, but I really love this conversation, and so this is also a geek podcast, so there's probably listeners at home shouting out Cumberbatch and David Tennant.
I haven't seen
Cumberbatch
is Hamlet. Oh God! Like
so
a puddle.
Cumberbatch did film his. Was a movie.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Can I see it?
I think.
Oh,
I haven't
man.
Seen it. I mean, I've seen the Tenet version. You know, they had Patrick Stewart is Claudius.
Was he doing his normal accent, or did he do a British accent or an English accent?
No, I mean, he sounded a lot like...
Did his usual brogue?
His usual brogue, yeah.
Okay. I always find it... I think it would be really interesting to hear a very Scottish Prince of Denmark.
I think I should point out, just because it's by association, friend of the show, Robert Cargill, mm-hmm. while he was in England filming Doctor Strange, got to watch Benedict Cumberbatch perform him.
Oh, wow. I suppose, because it would have been happening then.
Because he and Benedict Cumberbatch are friends.
Aha.
You mean Ben?
You mean Ben?
He prefers Ben.
BC?
Yeah.
Right.
Just think about it.
Refer to him as the cum.
Just by listening to this podcast, you are 3 degrees of separation from Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
Dreams fulfilled.
Hooray.
Yes.
All right.
Keanu Reeves did do a Hamlet.
Yeah, I don't.
Whoa.
I'd see that. I'd see Keanu Reeves do Hamlet.
A ghost, whoa.
Is this a dagger I see before me?
Let's see. Whoa. How about Shakespeare has been staged and filmed in various genres, themes, and time periods. What do you like? Do you like it being set in the period? Do you like it updated? What would you like to see in a Shakespeare play? What resonates with you?
I have to admit, I really like it when Shakespeare is adapted to things that aren't traditionally Shakespearean. Mm. And I think that because A, it's enjoyable to people that aren't in on the joke or the reference. It doesn't have to be a joke. But people can enjoy like Sons of Anarchy and have no fucking clue that it has anything to do with Hamlet or any, you know, Shakespeare. But people who are in on the joke get that little bit of extra enjoyment out of it and looking for those similarities and looking for those. It's almost like Easter egg hunting in a movie adaptation. Mm-hmm. I like that being in on the joke and being rewarded as someone who is familiar with the source material is something that I really get a lot of enjoyment of. In you know, obviously most commonly in comic movies and Marvel Netflix stuff, but I like it for Shakespearean stuff too. When you can identify which two guys are your Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in something that's based on Hamlet, like all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, like you get that little bit of reward chemicals in your brain for the pattern recognition clicking. Cool. And like it, I get a little bit of positive feedback out of that.
Shakespeare is almost archetypal in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not because he originated the stories, but he took those archetypes, turned it into a story, but that has become the new archetype.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then with our production, we had an African-American play Hamlet. Not the first guy who ever done that.
Right.
But I would like to see Hamlet done by a woman. I mean, I was excited.
We did
to
that
see
in my college.
Did you?
Catherine Fumier.
We did that at St. Kate's.
In our show, did she played Hamlet in another version here in Minneapolis? There was a Royal Shakespeare Company had a woman play King Lear. I would love to see that. And I think because they're so archetypal in that way, that you could strip away the purest nature of it and have anybody play those
there's
parts.
There's a version of Richard III. In which Sir Ian McKellen played Richard.
Yes.
It is filmed, and I actually saw it staged because it came through the Twin Cities when it was touring, where they reimagined it as essentially the rise of Hitler.
Mm-hmm. That's what they did for the Hamlet, where there were two women in my high school. There was a lot, or my college. It was a lot going on.
That sounds wrong.
Fortinbras was a Nazi, so all those guys were the Nazis.
Oh, jeez.
And Hamlet was a woman, and so was Ophelia, so it was also a lesbian thing. And, like, there was a lot. There was just a lot happening.
The Nazi angle makes a lot more sense with Richard III.
Yes, it does.
Tempest, you could throw some Nazis.
Oh, you could. You can throw Nazis.
I'll throw Nazis.
Nazis
we
anymore.
Should throw all the Nazis in a tempest.
You can throw Nazis into Midsummer Night's Dream. I mean, why not?
Why not?
It's by Nazi Romeo and Juliet, where it's the Antifa and Nazis falling in love across the picket line in a counter protest.
Romeo's alt-right. Juliet is a Jew.
East Berlin and West Berlin, two houses, both alike in dignity.
They are remaking West Side Story.
Right.
A new West Side Story, so look for that.
That's
coming
exciting.
To your theater soon.
So I think
looking forward to hearing all those slurs
actually
again.
Actually, the Richard III that Ian McKellen did is excellent. And I think that...
Without a doubt.
I would think it would be a shame if the only way you could ever perform Shakespeare is everybody in Elizabethan mm-hmm. ruffs. And because, I mean, if you did it the way it was originally done, you wouldn't do Midsummer Night's Dream set in Greece. Mm-hmm. When we did it, when I did a performance of Midsummer Night's Dream in college, we actually wore traditional Greek clothing and set it entirely in ancient Greece. Now that's never how it
set
would have been.
Set it in ancient Greece. I was like, do you mean you performed it in ancient Greek?
Yes, we did.
I was just like,
we translated it to Greek. It was,
five people really enjoyed watching it.
it was set in ancient Greece.
Gotcha.
And I think that's it never would have been performed that way when Shakespeare originally had those shows produced. So even by doing that, you're doing something outside of the original vision for Shakespeare's plays. So I can't object to it at all.
Mm-hmm. I like Elizabethan. I like it. I like the pomp and circumstance of it. I don't prefer it. I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's any way that I prefer Shakespeare, but I enjoy it so much more when it's, you know, like lots of crazy brocade and like especially with things like, you know, the when there's characters gender swapping. And so, you know, just things like that. I very much enjoy it being set where it should be set. And just seeing that, but that also there's so much to, like the modernization is it's the whole world is your oyster there, so it's hard to compare the two, really. Yeah.
In our Hamlet, we had a girl playing Horatio and a white girl playing Horatio and African American male playing Hamlet, and there were some people that just could not get over the idea.
Oh wow!
That there's something romantic there. They couldn't just be friends.
Sure.
Can't happen. And wow.
I love the. I saw it again recently. That says like it was someone like blogging saying all these straight people saying men and women can't be friends. Like us gay people over here are just laughing our asses off. And it's like bisexuals have no friends. There is only prey. it's literally impossible for bisexual people to have friends.
You know, I don't feel the same way about something like a Greek play though. Like I would prefer to see like. Oedipus Rex or like an Antigone done in a more traditional style than in an updated style. I don't think I would be like watching a TV drama and being like, oh shit, this is some Greek shit. Oh, I didn't even notice. Like, I think I would prefer to see that done in a more traditional sense.
But I
so I don't necessarily feel that way about everything.
I think it's about laying a foundation. So I'm glad I saw adaptations of Shakespeare done in an Elizabethan way.
Mm-hmm.
So then, okay, I got that out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I can see this expanded into another universe.
Totally.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah,
question.
I mean, if you want another question, I got another question.
Let's do one more question.
Let's do one more. What Shakespeare play resonates the best for you, and what do you like about it? Which one? We talked about a lot of them.
What's the one you like the most?
Yeah.
Which one do you like the most?
Arrgh.
I like Much Ado About Nothing the most, and partially because I really identified with Beatrice being sharp-tongued and not traditionally pretty and possibly too mouthy to ever get married.
Yeah.
And people would tell me all the time, like, oh, you better be sweeter if you want a husband. Like, for real. Mm. Like, I had older male family members from the South saying, wow. like you sure talk a lot for someone who thinks she's going to get married. Or, like, or I can't believe, like, they would meet my boyfriends. But, like, you don't mind how much she talks or she's not too smart for you things like that. And so the idea that that was, like, that there was this heroine of the play, like, rejecting the idea that you had to dumb yourself down for a man flat out and saying, I'd rather be alone than pretend to be stupid so that some man will love me. Nope. And I love that. And then that she meets her argumentative, witty match, who is as much of a, like, jerk as she is. And everyone's telling him, you're too brash and you're never going to find anyone who will put up with you. And so I don't know.
Get it.
For some reason, I really like that play.
Yeah. My undergraduate thesis was on the nexus of the erotics of sex and death.
Oh,
Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah, that's man.
Yeah,
that sounds exciting.
I want to eat his heart in the marketplace.
Exactly.
Whoa,
yeah.
Are you coming on that? What's the deal? What's going on there?
Yeah.
That's rough love.
that's how you know it's real. until you have that, you don't even know what love is.
I think the first Shakespearean play that ever really, really, like I got it, is still to this day my favorite, and it's Macbeth.
Hmm.
And I feel I love, like, it has fucking everything.
Another power
it has
couple.
Ambition and politics, and it has supernatural stuff. It has like a Lord of the Rings, like I am no man twist, like yeah. for like, you know, nobody can kill Macbeth except for someone that hasn't been, you know, born of a woman. Like, yeah. like that's such a cool, like, you know, kind of yeah, fuck you,
no
clever
man, born
twist.
Woman.
Yeah. yeah, yeah. Like I feel like Macbeth has everything.
It opens with witches. Like, how
right.
much cooler can you get?
Yeah, it's super iconic. Like, right off the bat, it yeah. has the best fucking hook.
The blood like, scene. Like,
it's,
yeah.
it's great. It's a warning of ambition, which I kind of like. I like that it's I don't
You're
know.
Such
yeah,
a Slytherin.
I yeah, but.
He's a total Slytherin, so his favorite play is Macbeth, of course. Like, that makes sense. It makes sense.
Where the ambitious guy gets it. I mean,
I know.
Like,
he does get it in the end. Yeah.
And he really earns getting it.
He really.
Yeah.
He gets what he earns.
And in the beginning, like, Macbeth is not a bad guy.
No.
But people are quick to say, like, Lady Macbeth is the fucking, she's the bad one. She's the one you got to watch out for. But like, if he was really that good, she didn't have to push him much.
Yeah, but,
like he was really quick to change his tune
uh-huh.
when she was like, but you know, it could be cool.
Yeah.
And I think that I feel like that message in like, politics is something that is always going to be a thing. It's
yeah.
like you can put someone in power that is great and that is a good person, but like it doesn't, you could be a perfect person and it might not take much
mm-hmm.
to just push you over that edge and start
yeah.
doing bad things for more power.
Macbeth is the story of Anakin Skywalker by a good writer.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Macbeth.
Where Sheev Palpatine is his Lady Macbeth, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. She. Yeah. Totally.
So.
The witches are the force?
Quick note, I got to play Macbeth, and in our production we had two women play Lady Macbeth, and they
oh.
split the lines so that you could see who was the more conniving and who was more
oh,
innocent.
Oh, that's
and they
cool.
they played off each other, it was sort of, some scenes looked like this sort of emotional, intellectual menage a trois. And sometimes
were they always
close.
Both there?
But they were both there the whole time.
Neat.
That's awesome.
What a
really
neat
cool.
idea for staging.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
What's your favorite, Tim? What's your most resonant?
It is really hard, but I think I do have to pick Hamlet.
Cool.
I've always found, like, I mean, I talked about a little bit just the way that the Fortinbras piece that's cut out so often is this really fascinating thing where Shakespeare is ruminating on the consequences of Claudius and Hamlet's decisions. And there is that piece of Hamlet being trapped in the idea that he needs to get revenge, but he doesn't necessarily want to be a killer, that that's not who he is, that he is being
right.
driven to do something that he doesn't want to do, and as a result he causes the death of the woman he loves.
Mm-hmm.
He causes the death of Laertes, who's essentially just an innocent...
Just a really good guy, too.
A good guy who's just pissed off because his sister's dead, right?
And he thinks that Hamlet made his sister crazy.
And then gets
yeah.
manipulated
yeah.
by Claudius. There's the
mm-hmm.
whole thing of Hamlet's mother...
He's angry that Hamlet killed his dad, too.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the whole thing of Hamlet's mother, who is trying to fulfill the role of the role that a queen is expected to fulfill in
yeah.
that... in that position. And
also she struggles with the fact that she's property.
Yeah.
She's just handed over to the guy, to the next guy. Like, it's not even,
and she's
just there.
Making the
yeah.
best of the circumstances.
Yeah.
Right. Her
mm-hmm.
husband's dead.
That's
she
right.
pretty much has to marry her husband's brother. So what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
Well, she's not going to not be queen.
Yeah.
right.
I mean,
that's a troubling character.
You didn't become
right.
queen to then not be queen because your dumb husband got murdered.
And there's also the fact that in the midst of all of this, it's a really funny play.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so much comedy in Hamlet that frequently gets written out
mm-hmm.
and ignored and adding that comedy to the tragedy, and it
mm-hmm.
creates a depth to these characters that I think is really impressive, because Hamlet, even in the midst of all the psychological bullshit that he's going through, can make jokes.
Yeah.
And that just to me makes it an exceptional piece of
mm.
theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the sometimes they war against each other, but King Lear is at the top for me.
Yeah. I love King Lear, too.
But Macbeth and Titus Andronicus are
there.
I've had the great pleasure of being in shows. I've done Hamlet, I've done Macbeth, I've done Titus, I've done King Lear. But King Lear just has that emotional catharsis, that deep beat down that...
especially lately.
Really gets my depression up and
running. Well, especially lately,
it's sad.
There was a scene in the White House that was straight out of King Lear, where he like turned to everyone at the table and was like, tell me how much you love me.
Absolutely.
Which of you loves me most?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And was just like, and that report, I remember like turning to Nick, I'm like, it's fucking King Lear. Like, this dude is like turning to each in turn and telling me like, tell me why you like, who thinks I'm the best and tell me why.
Yeah.
Why am I the best, you say?
Let's take a moment to go around the table and everyone just say good things about me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everyone swear your loyalty.
You're like, kidding. Isn't that enough?
It's so nuts. And that's one of those things where you're like, it's that archetype that echoes, and when you can find it like an Easter egg, like you were talking about, even in real life, it's just kind of to be like, like, fuck you. Fuck you. I hope you get what comes to you.
That's why Shakespeare's still around, is because it resonates. It's
absolutely
the story that keeps repeating generation after generation after generation. It continues to be true.
It's mimetic.
By the way, Richard III would be my second favorite.
12th Night, probably for me.
Yeah?
12th Night's so good.
I'm a sucker for a play within a play.
You're an asshole for asking this question.
Yeah, 12th Night.
Yeah, Charles, fuck
Midsummer's,
you. Also, thank you for being on our show. You were delightful.
I knew I couldn't come close to the D&D 5.
Oh, my God.
Y'all.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
You did a good job, though.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, well, thank you so much. Charles, where can we see you? I know you just had a Tipsy Kangaroo show recently.
Yes, Tipsy Kangaroo will be doing more shows all year. We will be once a month. We will be at the Brave New Workshop.
Awesome.
Once a month, we will be at Can Wonderland.
Oh, right on.
I'm just working on, I do audiobooks and I do films, and I'm a dad. That's about it.
That's excellent.
Come and see puppets.
Come see a naughty puppet improv.
That's right.
At Brave New Workshop or Can Wonderland.
Can it's not, it's like family friendly, isn't it?
It is family friendly.
Oh, is it?
You can get shakes. And you can have alcohol put in them, or you can keep the alcohol out.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good place.
I like
Captain Crunch and banana and ice cream in
there's
a
some
shake.
There's some nutso stuff.
And rum, if you want.
There's some nutso stuff. You can just have like a day's of calories in one shake. It's amazing.
It's a fantastic place. Keep your eye on Can Wonderland, because they are going to eventually, a 10-year plan is to build a hotel. They're building a parking ramp across the street, and they're going to put in a go-kart track inside.
Wow.
No shit.
There's also a very strong possibility they'll be putting in a theater. So
that's awesome.
Indeed, they will.
They've been getting a lot of good theater there. So I know Tim and I have done shows there. Nick was in one of them.
I do a weekly show.
Yeah, Tim does a weekly show. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. If you want to tell us what you think about our Shakespeare choices or your own Shakespeare answers to the amazing questions, weigh in on Hamlet, you can post on our Facebook page. You can also tweet at us, or if you want, you can comment on our website, which we get to when we can. But I'm telling you, if you really want us to pay attention, you go to Facebook. The best thing. Please do everything you can to like us when you are on the Facebook page, because it's surprising how few likes we have on our page for how many of you are downloading us every week.
Could light some fires too.
You could light some fires. Yep. Just light things on fire. That's a really good idea.
Burn them down.
Burn it up. Light them up. All right. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
That's my friend Yorick. How can you tell? By taste?
We're geeks. God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
We get in there, the girl, the young girl who's running the day over there goes, well, get on your things, and then Captain Cassian has a message for you. And
you
and I'm like, Andor? Does she mean Captain Andor? Or is it like, are we suddenly calling people by their first names? Yeah.